I think increasingly over the last 15 years as a nation, what we've come to is we may not be the first or the eighth or the ninth, but in many spaces we will be the best.
Yeah.
Quick commerce hasn't worked anywhere else in the world. In India, I think in the top 100 to 200 cities, India is going to be quick.
How do you stay curious, like, after such a successful career? People switch off, man. People, like, kind of...
I think the most important thing is to not believe you're successful. I think the first set of big companies you'll see coming out of India in AI are going to be application companies. In a 7 trillion economy, if you can't build a 1,000 crore revenue company, like, what are we talking about?
I think people are hungry for inspiration and intellect, both. And in a social setting, sounding and looking smart is now becoming very important.
India spends about 0.6% of GDP on R&D.
Correct.
US is at about 3.5%. China is at about 3%. We are at 0.6% on a
4 trillion.
Almost 4 trillion GDP. Almost. We're not there. The most important thing that has changed over the last 2 or 3 years is
Same here.
Check 1, 2, 3. Are you enjoying yourself?
No, as I told, I don't really like podcasts.
On that note.
That's a great way to start.
What an incredible episode we just shot with Rajan Anandan, co-hosted by Prachi, who has been on the podcast before. Rajan has had a stellar career, like from being a partner at McKinsey to heading Microsoft and Google in India to now leading early stage investments for Surge at Peak 15 as a managing director. Founders, operators, investors, everyone has this one common theme about Rajan, which is he's full of energy and he's super optimistic about India. And today's episode really unpeeled the onion on that. We spoke about AI, what it means for India at an AI level, outside AI, what it means to be a great founder, what's the backing thesis, and what excites him about life in general. In addition, we had Prachi, who's kind of worked with Rajan at Surge and now is a founder of an educational institute where Surge has invested. So it was great to get insights from her on his impact on her over her 5-year career at Sequoia or Peak 15. And then after that, how he kind of helped her think about her new career as an entrepreneur. I have really started liking this 3-way format of the barbershop, where we get either a founder with their favorite investor, in this case, an investor with like a newly minted founder, but do kind of come in with comments on like 2 guests who we could kind of get on the pod in the future and would love to get insights from you as well. I hope you enjoyed this episode as much as I did, and please tune into the barbershop for our future. Thank you. Welcome to the barbershop, Rajan.
Yeah, of course. Good to be at the barbershop.
But why don't you like podcasts? I take that a little personally.
No, but have we started recording or not?
Yeah, long back.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah? Wow. Interesting. No, I love listening to podcasts.
Huh.
No, in general, you know, look, I'm just, you know, I just do, you know, too many events and speak a lot and it's more that.
Okay.
Yeah. No, I love listening to podcasts. I probably listen to 2 or 3 podcasts a day.
Okay. Really? Which one are these?
I listen to a lot of tech podcasts.
Uh-huh.
So, Harry Stebbings, 20VC,
yeah.
I listen to him. Reid Hoffman's got a new one right on AI.
Yeah.
I really like that. I mean, I just try to find...
But when do you get the time?
Tech. I walk for an hour in the morning.
Hmm.
Yeah, commute also. Commute?
Yeah, commute. Although commute, you know, by the time, you know, I get to the office before 8, so usually I have like a call or something like that. But commute, walk. I mean, I'm in India because there's so much dead time.
Yeah. And we always have the internet. I don't know if you've seen, have you been in the Delhi metro recently?
We went a few weeks ago.
But we were together. So I don't know. If you go alone, you can notice what people are doing around you.
Hmm.
The number of people listening in and not scrolling.
Hmm.
So 2 years, 3 years back, the number of scrollers were very high. Now
people
a lot
are more
of
listening. But do you know whether they're listening to music or?
No. But there.
But how many podcast subs are there in India? Podcast subscribers?
That's a good question. Whether do we know? I'm sure. We have 1 million. Nikhil probably has 2 million. Raj and Beer Biceps are only 4-5 million each.
The new one.
My view is between 5 to 10 million.
Yeah, still quite small.
But there are also a lot of like these audio content apps, which are like storytelling apps.
58 million listeners a month.
That'll have overlaps.
Podcast.
No, but that's
or
not
audio
unique.
Content
no, that's
listeners,
uniques,
probably.
Uniques will probably be 10 million. Same guy will listen to 5.
Huh.
No, that's not. There are so many. There's Cuckoo FM that's come up for regional.
So
content.
That is.
There's YouTube listeners. There's a lot of them.
And then there's Stage.
The Stage, yeah. So outside of the podcast, the audio content listeners, they're short stories.
Yeah.
Which are also kind of entertainment.
Yeah. I think the market
outside
will
of
grow.
Music.
Because I think people are hungry for inspiration and intellect, both. And in a social setting, sounding and looking smart is now becoming very important. How aware are you?
That's true.
Is your point of view on anything in the world? From Gaza to Russia, Ukraine to politics to startups, everything. You want to like sound smart. So from a social standpoint, this is where people get it. And they now convert this into scripts, put it into, AI models and then kind of take out a TLDR for it. And you don't even have to listen to the whole thing.
I think they're very useful when you... I think both maybe podcasts are less for entertainment, but more for knowledge, right?
Yes. Yes.
I think they're very useful. It's really quite remarkable.
Absolutely. What DeepSeek has done has actually kind of, it's very likely or it's very real now that you don't need 20 billion to build OpenAI and all of that could kind of become not if foundational models are as efficient as, now we don't know how much of that 5 million, 10 million is actually real, whether it's more or less, etc. It's definitely not a billion, right? And it's now becoming clear that you can very smartly, clever engineer something on top of what is already available. And a lot of this will be open source. And it is actually very real. I don't know whether you saw the Perplexity founder kind of say, anyone in India doing something smart and has reached certain level of scale on the parameters, I'm happy to put in a million. Let's get this going. And I see this happening at a daily level almost. But you were prophetic about it.
Yeah, I mean, firstly, I mean, OpenAI is a phenomenal company. And also, it's important to keep in mind that what we saw was built off. They leveraged a lot of what is out there, right? Whether it's Llama, whether it's OpenAI. So they've leveraged a fair bit of what has already been developed. It wasn't a true build from scratch, if you will, right? But look, the reality is the only thing you can predict about generally what's happened with technology is it just keeps getting better and it gets more efficient over time, right?
Yeah.
And I think what they've done is really quite remarkable, but I don't know whether you've seen in the last 2 or 3 days, there are 10 labs in China that seem to be all doing Didi. I don't know whether you follow him on Twitter. He's at Mendel Ventures. He put out a tweet today, actually, that there are 10 labs, he's named all of them. You know, some of them are part of the large... the ByteDance and so on and so forth, Tencent, that are all doing really world-class work. So I think you'll see, look, it's still, the simple way I think about it is, you know, this is a 10, 15, 20-year game.
Yeah.
You know, we are still in the first inning of a 5-match test series.
Yeah.
You know, and maybe we're in the second day of the first test match. So we got like to play day 3, day 4, day 5. That's the first test match. And you got to play the second test match. You got to play the third test match. And, you know, it's very hard to predict where it's going to go. I think OpenAI will continue to be very successful. So will NVIDIA. But there will be other players who will emerge. I mean, in India, we have a company called Sarvam.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, they've been quite quiet over this period. But if you look at Indic language models, what they've done is pretty phenomenal, and you'll hear about it as time goes on. But the performance on Indic languages, what they can do, their efficiencies. Actually, you should get Vivek or Pratyush on your podcast. Actually, that's a very...
That'll be great,
You should see. I don't think they do podcasts, but maybe you can convince them. You should try. So I think it's a very interesting time, right? And I mean, again, look, it's the second day of... the first test match in a 5-match series. So
But imagine,
we have a long way to go.
But to take your analogy forward, what I think is, it's the second day, first session, but suddenly the away team has the best equipment possible, which they have never used in nets before. And so now there's a level up that is very, very real and very, very possible. And we were talking to someone who heads the India AI mission. And he said this is now like kind of a paradigm shift where this is India's ho sakta hai moment.
Yeah.
Because we never thought, because if you think about our IT export for the last 30, 40 years, we were English speaking, mathematically proficient engineers who suddenly exported IT to the world, to banks and insurance companies and airlines. But now, given that there is democratization of the foundation, now the talent needed on top is something India probably has at a DevOps level, at an engineering level. Do you think, are you seeing this action happening in the ecosystem, or do you think it's just treated as a buzzword?
No, I mean, look, if you take a step back and like maybe the question to ask, right, is will India be a AI superpower or not?
Yes.
Let's just like frame the question, right? The answer is absolutely yes, right? I mean, there is just no question, and I'll give you the reasons why it is. I mean, today it's not, right? Today, I mean, if you look at sort of where the AI, there are two AI superpowers in the world. One is the US, the other one is China, right? China has been for some time. I think now it's just become pretty clear to the rest of the world that what they've been up to. But if you take again, right, like the question is not who's going to win the first match.
Yeah.
The question is who wins the series.
Yeah.
Okay, that's always the, you have to focus on the goal. The goal is not to win the first match and then you lose the next four test matches. Yeah. You know, I mean, like that would suck, right? Yeah. So you have to win the series. And the question is who wins the series.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know whether there's a winner or it's a tie, but, you know, I think we have a real shot and I'll tell you why. So I think firstly, you know, I think the first set of big companies you'll see coming out of India in AI are going to be application companies.
Correct.
Right? Nandan's talked about that. You know, whether you look at in our portfolio, we have a company called InVideo. We have a bunch of enterprise companies.
Sankeet is scaling like, kind of ridden that so
well. Yeah, I mean, you know, whether it's, you look, so if you look at applications, you know, you have prosumer, consumer.
Yeah.
You have vertical AI companies. You have enterprise AI companies, right? Like this weekend, we did a consumer AI hackathon in Bangalore. I mean, the caliber of the talent is, you know, pretty extraordinary, right? So I think that...
And what kind of talent is this, if I were just to double click, like what... Across
these are product managers and engineers, product, right? Okay. Product managers, engineers. There were a couple of scientists, sort of research scientists.
Do we need that element of it? Do we need the applied?
Oh yeah, we do. I mean, if you want to do the model layer stuff, so I'll get to that. So I think that is done, right?
Yeah,
and so that started with IT services. Then we went through the SaaS wave. Five years ago, we had no SaaS unicorns. Today, we have 25. I think we'll have 100 SaaS unicorns, but now they'll be called AI unicorns because every SaaS company is becoming an AI company and they have core AI features. Either your native AI or your sort of AI fork, as I call it, right? So I think we'll have 100 software companies that are going to be unicorns before the end of the decade, right? So I think application, I think everybody agrees. And I think the superpower there that we have is globally, we know how to do this. And in India, we have a lot of data.
Yeah.
Right. So if you look at, like, let's take a company in Noida called Attentive. Okay. Attentive is, they do vertical AI. They started off with outdoor services in the US and now they're focusing on construction. Right. The world's first model in a specific aspect of construction will be launched in that specific aspect. I can't tell you what it is because it's not launched yet and wouldn't be fair for me to tell you. In around June, July, because these guys are using human plus data from the US, but humans in India, and they're taking some very unique approaches to building a domain-specific model. It's going to be an Indian company, right? So, and you're going to see, and we have many of these in our portfolio. So I think on the application layer, yes, are we there already? Absolutely not. But we have every shot, and you know, and we have a history of
and
doing
attracting
that.
Attracting the right kind of people to come and do it.
Yeah, no application. I mean, we know how to do applications, right? Yeah. Like, I mean, we're an application capital of the world already, right? So if you look at number of internet users that use AI products, okay. Either AI native products like a ChatGPT or like basically AI products, like Google Search is an AI product, okay? I mean, like, you know, these are all AI. We're just talking about LLMs, right? It's a new avatar. So, I mean, India is the largest market already, right? So, so application layer. Then you've got the next sort of, you drop down. You have tooling and infrastructure.
Yeah.
I think we'll do very well with that. We have a bunch of companies in India already that are kind of front runners in their own respective kind of spaces. And now we get to the model layer, right? Which is sort of the OpenAI, what happened this week or last couple of weeks with the Chinese players. I think there, you know, you do need researchers, right? So if you look at the Sarvam team, they have real research talent, right? Like Pratyush, Vivek, I mean, these are world-class researchers. So I think we will get more of that. I think what you'll see is you don't need to have large numbers of them, which is what the Chinese have, at least this particular team has shown, right? Like this is not the classic team that you see in the Bay Area, but you need some of that, right?
Yeah.
Especially, you know, because you have to innovate. So I think what you'll see is you'll see more researchers, right? I don't know whether you know this, but the government, the Ministry of Higher Ed, there's 1,000 crores, right? That has been allocated to 3 centers of excellence, one in agriculture, one in healthcare, and one in sustainable cities.
Okay.
Each center of excellence will get 300 crores over the next 4 years they have to spend it to basically build applied AI.
Wow.
Right.
Okay.
And these are, and by the way, there was a committee of 3 or 4 of us, Manish from Google, DeepMind, and a few others. Look, the caliber of the researchers that we have is world-class. Okay. Mm-hmm. What they haven't had to date is 2 things. Okay. They haven't had budgets and they haven't had compute.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right? With the India AI mission now, I mean, today actually, Minister Ashwini Vaishnav came, I don't know whether you saw it.
Yeah.
He said in 10 months, we're going to have our own model. Yeah. Actually, we already have our own model. Like Sarvam's built the model in local languages, but now it has to compete on English and, you know, all this other stuff, right? So I think research is one. We need to have more researchers, but we have the talent. We haven't had it. I think the other thing is we need to have compute, right? And compute has been expensive, right? So now that we have access to compute, I think that's great. So I think look, across the stack, so if you look at applications, we have the capability, we have the funding, we know the talent, we have a history, we have a track record. Tooling, you know, we know how to do that, right? Tooling is like infrastructure, right? Yeah. Optimizing, you know, things like that. And then on the models, I think that game, we are behind, of course, right? The US is, you know, and China are way ahead. But I think you'll see us come at it. And you know, the way I always think about India, Shantanu, is we are never the first, the second, the third, the fourth, or the tenth, right? Google was not the first search engine, second, third, and third, fourth search engine, right? It was the best. Facebook was the 20th social network or something like that. It was the best. But I think increasingly over the last 15 years as a nation, what we've come to is we may not be the first or the eighth or the ninth, but in many spaces, we will be the best.
Yeah.
Okay, so what are some examples? Take mobile broadband, right? There's no question in the world who's got the most advanced mobile broadband services, right? It is India by far, right? There's nowhere on planet Earth you can land and have the kind of connectivity at the prices that we have, right? You know,
it's
so
amazing how private enterprises help.
No, you can go to Manhattan today and the connectivity that you get is nothing compared to what you have here, right? Then you can look at payments, right? Actually, what people don't realize is we have 55% of global mobile real-time payments in India, and it's built on open source, and it's built by less than 800 engineers, okay? That's UPI.
By the government,
I mean, it's like crazy, right?
It's
like,
insane.
Like, whoa. I mean, that's like amazing. So, but it was a different paradigm, right? Like whether it was Jio, that was a different paradigm. Payments is a different paradigm. And, you know, we were just talking about Blinkit, right? So, or Quick Commerce. Quick Commerce hasn't worked anywhere else in the world. In India, I think in the top 100 to 200 cities, India is going to be Quick.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, it's the weirdest thing to say because our digital infrastructure is great, but our physical infrastructure, especially within cities, is quite challenging.
Correct.
So if you imagine that, by the way, it's no longer 10 minutes. I don't know about what you guys have here, but like it's 8.
Yeah.
Like it's I live in Shantiniketan, it's eight. It's always 8.
Yeah.
8's the magic number, right? So I can imagine that you can order all this stuff on 8 and, you know, and today it's a certain set of products. But I think everything's going to be Quick, right?
Yeah.
So you know, and I think you'll see this, like for instance, like let's take space. Okay, today there are probably 5 countries in the world that are in the space race. We are not clearly in the top. But if you ask me 10 years from now, is India going to be 1 or 2? Absolutely. Why? Because we have the engineering talent. We have ISRO, right? And actually, we have great engineers, right? Whether you look at the Skyroot team, the Agnikul team, you know, we are investors in a company called Digantara. You look at all our teams. These are world-class. You have world-class, you have capital, you have regulatory support, boom, right? It changes. So I think with when it comes to models, what I can tell you is we will, I think what the recent events over the last couple of weeks, which you mentioned, what it has shown is that there is a way.
Yeah.
Like even if this had happened, like I was always confident that we will innovate, but in a very different way, right?
Yeah. Like, but Rajan, just on that, like, how do you then think about investing in that sense? Because there's a certain way that we thought about, say, moats.
Yeah.
And, you know, we earlier in the podcast, we talked about second day, first inning, whatever it was, right? And then the goal is to be the best and to win the series. So in such cases, how do you really think about picking that winner?
Yeah, I think moats is like as investors.
Especially in AI.
I think if you like, you know, there was a podcast, you know, like I hosted Arvind, who's the founder of Gleam.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have an annual U.S. immersion, it happens in 2 weeks. In 2024, we had it. Arvind is the founder of Glean. You know, it's probably the fastest growing enterprise AI company. I asked him this specific question. He says, look, there are no moats. As a startup, there are no moats, okay? The only moat you have is team and execution and speed.
Yeah.
You just have to be fast, really fast. And that's what it is, right? Like if you look at what's coming out of China, what's the moat?
Yeah.
Different ideas and speed.
Efficiency,
like,
absolutely.
No, and speed. Yeah. Like, you know, everybody underestimates speed.
You know, DeepSeek V1 came out in December last week. No one noticed it.
Yeah.
It took them 19 days to get to...
I mean, so speed, I think...
It's crazy.
It's crazy.
Though, you know, like, of course, over time, companies get to have brands and distribution and all of that, right? Like, but
as an investor, does that make you nervous?
No, I mean, it doesn't make you nervous, right? I mean, look at, I mean, 30% of the investments we make at Surge, you know, she was at Surge until very recently, are, you know, pre-launch companies. What's the moat? There's no moat in a pre-launch company. Not 30% of the investments that we make at Surge are pre-launch.
Yeah.
Okay, not just pre-launch. Not a line of code is written, okay? So what is the moat in a company, like your company? What is the moat?
You're the moat, yeah.
You're the moat.
Yeah.
You're the moat. So the bet is that you back great founders who are, you know, obviously are very, very, you know, smart in whatever, you know, they understand the space. But at the end of the day, you're betting that that founder or that founding team is just going to go launch, iterate really fast, get to PMF and execute.
And you're right, because you know what? You said three things. You said world-class talent, regulatory infrastructure and capital. I think one and two, we will solve, especially one, because in AI, the tribal community is super important. Like, you build off of each other. You don't need to wait for kind of innovation to happen. It's happening around the corner, and it's that physical and mental proximity of talent is super critical. I also read somewhere that someone said, people are thinking this is a US versus China game. Mm-hmm. It's actually a Beijing versus Guangzhou versus Shenzhen game. Like, it's no one's even close. And we're going to see this in the next 2-3 months, what they're capable of. And I get really excited when I see that India has like now this pot boiler of talent. The government is getting behind it. We have investors like you who are talking about it a lot, that we can quickly kind of leap. Like, we went from desktops to mobiles without, like, we leapfrogged the whole laptop thing, right? I think we can actually leapfrog this very quickly to get there. And it should be a Beijing versus Delhi game very quickly.
Yeah, and also, like, Gurgaon, Bangalore. I think, like, everybody gets super excited about or disappointed that, you know, looking at short time frames, right? Like, so, I mean, I just use this analogy always, right? Like, the goal is not to win the first match.
Yeah.
You got to win the series, right? And also, like, you can remember, right? If there are five matches in the series, if you lose the first three, then you don't have a shot.
Yeah.
But if you're in day two,
yeah.
I mean, you know, what you want to do is make sure that you stay focused and
stay fit.
You keep your ambition. And yeah, I mean, and look, the reality is, like, who's got more talent? Just raw engineering talent.
Yeah.
And also, like, we have this benefit of everything that we do, especially if it's an India-focused thing, right, needs to be at a cost point.
Yeah.
At a price point, right? To achieve population scale, right? Yeah. So I think, like, at least my view is over the next 20 years, there's not going to be any industry that can make anything, software or hardware, at the prices we're going to make it, because we're going to make them at prices that a billion Indians have to consume. Yeah. That's why payments was free.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, think about it, right? Like, you know, there's a 400 billion market cap company globally. Yeah. That has a 200, 300 bip take rate, basis point take rate, right? Here it's free. Now, of course, when it's free, you know, it puts a, you know, mandate to innovate, right? Yeah. Like Phone Pay and Google Pay and Paytm, they have to go find other ways to innovate. So, by the way, you can look at cars.
Yeah.
Nobody makes cars as cheap as we do.
Yeah.
Nobody makes two-wheelers as cheap as we do.
Yeah.
And I think you'll see this happen in industry after industry after industry, right? Because, you know, in India, when you solve something, you can't solve it. Like, you know, one of the things I find really amusing is everybody says, look, everybody's building for 50 or 100 million Indians. That's because that's what they're building for.
Yeah.
But you can also go build India's most valuable companies, either build for the world, which is like TCS, or they build for India, right? Like, Mukesh Ambani doesn't think about 50 million users.
Correct.
Okay, absolutely. Mukesh Ambani thinks about a billion Indians, and that's why a gigabyte, which used to cost 250 rupees, when he launched was free. Right?
Yeah.
0 to 100 million users, free.
Yeah.
And then boom. 15 rupees. Now I think it's 18 rupees or 20 rupees a gigabyte or something, right? So you got to think like 250 rupees to 20 rupees. So I think and the only way you do that is you can't do that by doing it the way everybody else did it, right?
Yeah.
You have to kind of think differently. And, you know, we're seeing this like in our portfolio. I mean, this is not going beyond AI, but deep tech. We have a company called Metastable, right? Yeah. It's a battery recycling company in Bangalore. You know, this is a Shubham and his co-founder, IIT Kharagpur grad, right? A couple of years ago. They focus on lithium-ion battery recycling, okay? So they have come up with an entirely new way of doing battery recycling. It's 1/5 the capex and 1/5 the opex. Wow. Nobody in the world has this, okay? Now, like, everybody's like, whoa, is this possible? Yeah. Like, yeah, it's possible. I mean, we have a pilot factory. It took us a long time to get the factory up and running. Now, you know, we can crank out like a ton or two a day, and soon it'll be at 5 tons a day. But that you're going to see in industry after industry after industry, right? 50% of the global vaccine production is from India. Now.
Yeah.
Do you know this?
Yeah.
50%, right? 50%. Why do we do that? We make them better than anybody else, okay? We can make them more efficiently, et cetera. So you'll see this. So here's the thing. In 20 years, everybody says China is the factory of the world. Today, China is the factory of the world. But, you know, 20 years from now, we will make everything more efficiently than anybody else.
That's insane optimism. Because the way I see China, I have two questions for you. Like, the way I see China today is they just take the cost curve and break it on the left side. You take any, you take a commodity, you take pesticide, you take lithium ion batteries, they will just put supply. Now, this is like government push. They will put 5x the global supply in like 4 cities of China, move the factories away from the cities to make sure pollution doesn't happen. And the cost curve gets broken and you can't compete. And it's very like, it's a very 1920s approach to creating like global competence and bringing in money. But I think we have to do that. No, and how will we do that? Yeah. Because I don't see like the from to on this as clearly as you know.
No, so look, the thing is, you know, we will do some of that. That's what PLI is.
Yeah. Right?
You create incentives.
Is it enough?
No, I mean, look, India is, it's never enough. But you have to keep in mind, right? We are just about touching 4 trillion of GDP.
Yeah.
China is 4.5 times larger.
18, so 19, yeah.
Part of it is also like you have to have a balance sheet to do these things, right? So as our quote-unquote balance sheet, which is our GDP, gets larger, we'll have more ability to do that. But look, the reality is we don't have 55% of global mobile real-time payments by subsidizing billions of dollars. Okay,
yeah.
You could say private sector, sure, yeah. They, you know, if they could charge, you know, 1.5% MDR, of course, you could say that. But that's not a subsidy. I mean, like, you decide. You're a private sector. You decide what you want to do, right? I mean, NPCI has less than 2,000 people. You know this? NPCI has less than 2,000
people.
Crazy,
right?
NPCI is the best fintech in the world. Period. Yeah. There's nothing. So my point is, and then by the way, you can look at, okay, let's look at mobile data, okay? Like, did we need, like, huge government subsidies to do that? Not really. Now, with manufacturing, yes, there is something, some stuff that you have to do. But you have to keep in mind that at some point, market forces have to take over, right? And I think where market forces take over is where we'll have a shot.
Yeah,
right?
I agree.
And also, like, look, the reality is there are things that Indian government can do and is doing, whether it's PLI, other things that we're doing, to promote domestic manufacturing, right? Like, and so look, and also you have to keep in mind, we have 1 million Indians who enter the work, who turn 18 every month, okay?
Mm.
1 million Indians turn 18 every month. We have 12 million Indians entering the workforce every year.
Yeah.
China's population is declining.
Yeah.
You know this? It's declining. So 20 years from now, what is India's workforce going to be? And what is China's workforce going to be?
Yeah.
And what is China's wages going to be? And what are our wages going to be?
Yeah.
Mm.
You know that for the last decade, entry-level IT programming salaries have not increased.
Yeah.
You know this?
Yeah.
It's a crazy thing, right?
Yeah.
It's a crazy thing. And you know, the other thing I'd forecast? For the next 10 years, it's not going to increase. You know why?
Yeah.
Because 1 million Indians are entering the job workforce every month.
Yeah.
So if 1 million Indians are entering... By the way, why is quick commerce going to be wildly profitable? Because 1 million Indians are entering the workforce every month. So, actually, I don't know whether you know this, the average Uber driver in Japan, you know what the average age is? 65.
Probably. It's crazy.
65, right? I mean, like...
That's crazy.
It's nuts.
That's crazy.
The world is aging, right? Like, so basically, so China is also aging. Right? And by the way, India will also age eventually. Yeah. So, if you take a 20-year view, right? The reality is, I mean, okay, now most factories will also have, you know, level of automation will go up 10x, etc. But if you need to have humans to do anything, there are only two countries in the world. India as a country will have humans, lots of them, young, vibrant, lots of energy.
And affordable.
And hugely affordable.
Yeah.
And the continent of Africa.
Yeah.
Right? Because Africa will, you know, already has 1.4 billion people. That number is going to increase dramatically.
It's the only place where fertility rates are above 2 now.
Yeah. I mean, it's only a crazy thing, right? Yeah.
So that's what people say. We have 20 years before we get rich, before we get old.
Yeah.
So we have 1 million people entering the workforce, but we create 250,000 jobs only right now.
Yeah.
Mm. So we have to bridge that.
Yeah, we have to bridge that. We have to bridge. And we will. Look, and the thing is, look, I don't know how we're going to do it. But, you know, like one thing, you know, I moved to India 20 years ago. I grew up here.
Where do you grow up?
I'm Sri Lankan.
Yes.
On my dad's side, you know, I have you go back a couple of generations, they're from South India, but like, you know, 100% Sri Lankan. Married to an Indian, who, you know, Prachi knows. The
Radhika, your wife.
Radhika, yeah. Yeah. So, you know, there's a reason I'm here. I'm 100% all in, massively bullish. This nation's got more prospects than any other nation on planet Earth. Because, you know, and look, I mean, we have the talent, we have the mark. I mean, look at what's happening in India. It's crazy.
Raja,
look
can
at
you your speak company. A little bit about how did you find your way to India, actually? Because you were in the US for a long time. How did that decision come about to
Oh, no. So I was back? With, I used to work for Michael Dell. And, you know, I was sort of trying to set up all these centers around the world. Like, this was the early days of offshoring.
Yeah.
And I was launching a bunch of centers in Asia. And I was launching in the Philippines. I had to go from zero to 2,000 people in like 9 months. Because those call centers, you know, to ramp them fast. And, you know, I was flying back and forth and I was really, I couldn't hire like a country manager, you know, for the Philippines. So I was literally trying to go to the Philippines. We had moved to Austin, Texas, which is where Dell is headquartered. Mm-hmm. And it was just very taxing, you know, like I was literally every other week flying from Austin, going to Philippines or Singapore or whatever. So I asked Radhika whether, you know, can we go and live India. Close to Asia, right? And she didn't want to live in the Philippines. She didn't want to live in Singapore. So I said, what about Delhi?
Because where did she grow up though?
Radhika is Indian, was born in Bombay, and then she moved to New York and New Jersey when she was about 7. So okay. She grew up in the US, but okay. You know, like she has a lot of family in Delhi and all that. Hmm. Parents weren't here, but she has extended family. So I said, what about Delhi? Because Dell didn't have anything in Delhi, nothing, zero. Right. She said, yeah, Delhi is interesting. So we moved 20 years ago with 2 suitcases to Delhi.
Wow.
We stayed in the Hyatt for 2 months. Then we stayed somewhere else, you know what it's called now, some other boutique hotel for a couple of months with 2 suitcases. And by the way, that's the only...
Which year? 20 years.
20 years ago.
2004.
End of 2004, December.
Hmm. Wow.
So exactly 20 years ago.
Did you have children then?
No, our daughter was born here.
Okay, after
she's,
that.
She just went off to college. Yeah, so Maya is 100% Delhi.
Really?
Yeah, 100% Delhi. Yeah. So born... Raised in Delhi. No, she spent 2 years. So I spent a year here in Delhi and then I went to Bangalore for a couple of years.
Yeah.
And then came back to Delhi. So yeah, that was...
Yeah.
So you've like India's home now? Delhi's home?
Yeah, I mean like we've been here 20 years. Delhi is 100% home.
That's the thing about India, right? Like I see the optimism for people who have kind of come here and are building, and I get glimpses of it every time I see a data point, right? Like for example, we got a few today. I found out that we made 12 billion iPhones in India last year.
Yeah.
12 billion iPhones. We made, India made it. But on the other hand, you also know that our net export is minus 50 billion. They were still importing 50 billion. And China is like at a trillion.
By the way, I think I don't know whether we're exporting a billion because
no,
Apple
importing.
Exports. Importing.
At an India level, our net import is 50 billion.
Yeah, yeah. That, and on, China, for phones.
Overall. And China's net export is $1 trillion.
Yeah. Well, China's exports is 3.1 trillion.
Net.
Total exports. I don't know about net.
Export
total
minus import is a trillion.
Ours is 750 billion. Okay. So our exports, services and products is about 750 billion.
Correct.
China is about 3.1 trillion or something like that.
It's a good point.
So look, and again, you know, like this is, you know, I think the thing is, look, we're a civilization thousands of years. Let's call it 5,000 years. By the way, have you read... William Dalrymple's new book?
No.
You got to read this book. By the way, you have to get William Dalrymple to on your podcast. Yeah, so he, you know...
I would love a connection.
What is the new book, The Road to... What is it?
Yeah, it's called The Golden...
Golden Road to...
Golden Road. Yeah, yeah, basically, you know, like, it's really good. It's about a millennia and a half of India's history from 250 BC to about 1580.
Wow.
Or 1250 AD or something like that. And it's really good. He should tell you the I don't want to take away the thesis of the book. But anyway, it's terrific. So basically, look, what... I think we're going to go back to that sort of greatness.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah, because, you know, the thing is, you know, everybody has like a 5, 10, 15 year view, right?
Yeah.
And I think in general, like South Asians tend to be quite, which is a good positive trait. We tend to be very self-critical.
Yeah. Mm.
Probably less promotional, like, you know, like, et cetera. But if you look at sort of the nation's, if you look at India's history, civilizational history, okay? I mean, there's no question, civilizationally. America's civilization is like a couple of hundred years, okay? I mean, that's really what it is, okay? So,
yeah.
India was, anyway, let me tell you what the William Dalrymple book is, otherwise no context here. So, for a millennia and a half, for 1,500 years, okay? India was the most influential country in the world.
Correct.
Right. That's basically what it is. So whether it's zero, right, whether it's mathematics, whether it's Buddhism, traveling all the way to China, etc., whether it's exports, you know, 30% of the Roman budget was spent on Indian products.
Correct.
Okay, so we know how to export stuff, okay, whether it was indigo, whether it was spices, whether it was all this kind of stuff. I think where we lost the plot was that industrial revolution, correct, you know, colonization, you know, etc. So if you just take a long view, I mean, this is a nation that's got game.
Yeah.
Okay, so there was a short, you know, in a history of 5,000 years, right, 300 years is, what, 7%?
Yeah.
6%?
Yeah.
So the simple way I think about India is for 93% of history, of a nation's civilization, nation's history,
we were dominant.
Top of the game.
Yeah,
we were dominant. 6%, we weren't. It's okay. Yeah. Your times come back. you're going to just, so another 20 years actually is make 6.5%.
Yeah.
So, you know, you got to take a really long view. And that's why, you know, our population is there's a near-term challenge. Of course, we have to create jobs. We'll create jobs. How are we going to create? I don't know, but we'll create jobs, right? So, but there's a huge potential to, like, having a young population that is very ambitious, you know, et cetera, et cetera. So, anyway.
It's such an important responsibility on, like, the current generation of leaders, whether it's entrepreneurs or the government or investors or capital allocators, to make sure that we don't lose this 20 years, because I think the long view is clearly very positive.
No, I think, look, I think we are well on our way. I think India is well
on. I struggle with this because I see, for example, the rupee depreciating.
Yeah.
And I struggle with understanding how, like, the export argument will ever satisfy the lack of liquidity
in 15 years we'll be energy independent,
but liquidity, we lose the plot now.
We have to, because look, when you grow at 6 or 7%, right, like, you need to, you know, we're consuming, right, we're consuming energy, we're consuming consumer electronics, we're consuming all this stuff. So look, let's just break it up. Okay. Energy bill is about 200 billion, something like that, right? Like, basically, our IT services exports is about 200 billion, offsets our energy bill.
Correct.
Right?
So that's 40%,
otherwise, the rupee will be at like 150.
Correct.
If we didn't have the IT services industry, correct, which is 200 billion of exports, rupee will be, I don't know what the exact
number is. Which is why the AI thing becomes very dangerous in the short term, because that 200 billion becomes very vulnerable to risk if AI really becomes.
Yeah, I mean, look, all the people who say that, by the way, have never worked in a large company. I have sold technology to large companies. I worked in large companies. Like, do you think they really know what to do with AI? No, they're going to need a lot of help to, like, you know, and by the way, these companies are going to get really, really efficient. You know, they're going to get super efficient.
You think
so? Yeah, I mean, like, people who say IT is going to, I mean, like, no idea how large enterprises work, you know? So anyway, that's a different podcast. You should, like, do a different podcast on that. Look, IT services, 250 billion. What I can tell you is it's going to only grow. No, it'll grow. Maybe it won't grow double digits, right?
Yeah.
It'll grow 6-7%. No, but if you look at the remaining, let's take energy. Okay, we import a lot of oil.
Yeah.
Okay.
Is that our largest?
Yeah, oil is. So what is going to happen is, you know, India has about 500 gigawatt right, of power. Renewables is about 170 gigawatt.
Yeah.
So we have a goal to get to 500 gigawatt by the end of the decade. Now, I don't know whether we'll get to 500 or not. But if you take a 15-20-year view, India will be self-sufficient on energy. That is, I'm 100% confident of that, okay? Because of renewables, right?
Yes.
We have more land, we have more ability to do solar, hydro, et cetera, et cetera. And I think eventually we'll get on the nuclear bandwagon and,
yeah,
we're already there. By the way, I don't know whether you know this. IIT Madras Research Park is powered by a nuclear, micro-nuclear.
Okay. Interesting.
Yeah. It's really cool. When you go there, you're going to go there for something, right? So I think like nuclear is a great area. We're going to innovate on nuclear. So, I mean, I don't mean we as in India will. So I think if you look at that, right, then you look at, let's take electronics, right? 99% of phones are assembled here.
Yeah.
But a lot of the components still come in, right? So that. But I think what you'll see is these ecosystems will emerge.
We're seeing
electronics,
it happen. Absolutely.
So, et cetera, right? So if you look at all the things that we import today, I think over time you'll see it either being substituted like oil for renewables or we'll start making these things. But I think the other thing that a lot of people maybe haven't realized yet is as the West ages, okay, robotics is, you know, like Japan has decided they're going to double down on robotics, okay? They're already very good. They'll keep going at it. But you're going to need humans, okay?
Yeah.
Like, you know, we are going to need humans. Yeah. So, I don't know what will happen 50 years from now, but certainly 20 years from now. And where are the humans going to come from?
Yeah.
right? So if you look at the NHS, which is the national, you know, the healthcare system in the UK, right? Yeah. I mean, to get an appointment in the NHS like takes weeks, if not months.
Yeah.
Because they don't have enough staff. Yes. It's not like they're being mean or anything. Correct. They just don't have enough staff, right? So
supply, it's a supply.
So yeah, whether it's nurses, whether it's contractors, whether it's plumbers, you name it, right? Because so far India has been supplying software programmers to the world, right? That is the IT services industry. That's 200 billion. We're going to provide, we are already providing some nurses, some doctors, but we're going to have to provide all the nurses.
Yeah. Mm.
We're going to have to provide most of the doctors.
Yeah.
We're going to have to provide just about anything that a human needs to do, right? So that itself, I think, will become gigantic.
Yeah.
You know, for the first time, I you probably know this, a million Indians are now going outside to study.
Yeah.
Right? That number will go from a million to 2 million to 3 million or whatever. Now, the only, the counterbalancing force here is immigration. Yeah. Right? Now, the US, of course, you know, we see what we do. So look, I'm not really, I mean, yes, of course. And by the way, will the rupee go to 100? Eventually, it probably will. Yeah. But if That's you take a 20-year view, is it going to constantly depreciate? I don't think so.
Yeah.
But do you really think there are things which need to go right over the next 20 years? Or we are well on our way?
No, I mean, look, of course. I mean, you know, every country has to do many things better.
What would be like top three, do you think?
No, I mean, we have to continue to work on our infrastructure.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, soft infrastructure, right? Mm. Education. You know, our education, we have to invest a lot more in education. We have to invest a lot more in healthcare. We have to create jobs, right? So manufacturing, which has started, needs to accelerate. But if you ask me, the top three things would be education, healthcare, and employment, jobs, creating jobs, right? So,
and education and jobs, And education and jobs has to be linked because our education and employability, the correlation is much weaker than we would like it to be. So, for example, skill development at a government level, training for all jobs, like we always aspire for very limited supply of, you know, of value. But now I think we should like create aspiration for being a great nurse, for example, or for being a great plumber, for example. We don't have a social aspiration for these jobs yet in India.
You know that the, I don't know whether you've had Abhiraj on your podcast, Urban Company Founder.
You had Varun and Raghav.
Okay, great. I don't know whether they mentioned this because Abhiraj mentioned this to me. The top 10% of the urban company team members, you know, the plumbers, beauticians, etc., make more than the entry-level programmers.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah. And like India needs like I don't know, 10x more beauticians, plumbers, electricians, like all of these things, right? So
the top salon stylist of urban companies in Bangalore, she's a single mother. She makes $1.5 lakh a month.
Yeah.
She's one of Urban Company's top customers for other services.
Mm. By the way, you know, we are investing in a company called Fitter.
You know JC,
right?
Yeah.
So
I don't know him. I know of him.
So we're like they're in our third cohort of surge, right? Yeah. So you know, we just had an update with JC, and you know, our only constraint to growth is having more fitness trainers.
Yeah.
I mean, in a country with a million Indians becoming 18, let's have more fitness trainers. Yeah. I'm like, wait a minute, we can't get enough fitness. No, we can't get enough fitness.
They don't
trainers.
Have a sophisticated layer of like vocational training institutes.
ITI, for example, is so important. Vocational training is so important.
Yeah, so I think, you know, agree.
You know, the other challenge to it is also the demand piece. I mean, there is a lot of demand, but there are fewer companies like, say, Urban Company and so on, which will create those kind of jobs with those kind of pays for them also. So it's a little bit of like, it'll have to go sort of like, say, hand in hand for the supply and demand to grow.
Also, it becomes a gig thing, no? The moment you can gig it to like $1 lakh a month, let's say for a fitness trainer, then you suddenly...
By the way, the average fitter trainer, I mean, I have to check with JC to make sure. So, JC, if I got the number wrong, it's about $1 lakh. It's crazy, right?
Crazy.
You'll never make that on a gym.
You make $1 lakh a month.
Crazy.
Yeah, and you'll never make that as an employee at Gold Gym.
Yeah.
You'll never do that.
You can't do that.
True.
So, actually, anybody who's watching this who's a trainer, should be a joint fitter. Become a fitter trainer.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's crazy.
You also become better as a trainer once you do that.
Yeah, and that's the other thing. They have this really high bar.
The thing with services also is that people, like for example, with trainers, it's very similar to teachers in IIT, JEE or CAT. Like people are attracted to rock stars.
Mm-hmm.
So the moment you become a rock star fitness trainer, then that 1 lakh becomes 5 very quickly. Then you suddenly become a micro institution.
Yeah.
And then you have your own people. It's instant.
I mean, it's an opportunity to become an entrepreneur.
Yeah.
And then sort of create that ecosystem and business around you.
Yeah.
There is an opportunity which couldn't have existed in, say, Gold Gym, for example.
Absolutely. Because people would come to Gold Gym for that one trainer. Or, for example, at Anandi,
you'd
probably have two rock star teachers who would affect your children.
Does everybody know what Anandi is? You just mentioned sure you dropped it.
We'll probably like kind of right. super
plug it. Plug it in. Subtly.
No, but that's a great point. So now I want to like kind of take a slight segue into, hence, what does it mean for us to create like the founder 3.0 for India, right? We kind of went through the Flipkarts and Snapdeals of the world. And then through 2017, 2018, we had a lot of boom, like the SaaS boom. We kind of had D2C companies. And then post-COVID, like now we have an opportunity to really like take advantage of AI and a couple of like really kind of foundational themes that can create liquidity, capital and employment and hence money for the country over the next 20 years. I think manufacturing is one of them. It does not get the attention it deserves, but manufacturing, healthcare, like some of the traditional infrastructure, I really wish there was a way in which founders today could think about becoming like putting up telecom towers the way Mukesh Bhai did, right? Like I think infrastructure is also a big part of what the next 20 years could be in addition to what the government is doing. So I want to come into, you're one of the few venture capitalists who's been such a successful operator of large companies, whether it was at Dell or Google or Microsoft. And you kind of now connect the dots across a lot of founders at different stages of whether it's pre-revenue to, you know, like super scaled PMF and large businesses. But how do you see India like kind of leveling up on founder quality, entrepreneur quality, top team quality? How have you seen that happen?
Yeah, so I think, look, it's a great question. I think on founder quality, in many spaces today, our founders are better than any other founders anywhere else in the world. Okay, so let's start with financial services and fintech. Mm. I mean, the founders that we have today of our top 10 fintech companies, nobody comes close. Okay, like some companies in the West are bigger because they have much larger markets. Right? Yeah. You have a $27 trillion GDP economy. Of course, you're going to have like a bigger business.
Sure.
But if you just look at founder quality, right, depth, capability, execution, I mean, and of course, like, you know, like quality is tied to ecosystem, right? Mm. Like, because we have such a vibrant fintech ecosystem, we have an enormous financial services ecosystem, right? You know, I think today the fintech, so in this current cohort of Surge, Surge is our, you know, seed stage platform where we invest capital and mentor founders and so on. We have two fintech companies, right? One is called Ambak, the other one is called SalarySay. I mean, the Ambak team, you know, they launched 12 months ago, okay? We have 50 banks that we partnered with. I mean, it's just crazy. I mean, like, the speed at which, because, you know, they didn't wake up one morning and say, how do I get a meeting with HDFC Bank? You know, this is like, they worked at two or three unicorns before, yeah. right? So they have all the relationships, they've done it before. You know, they're three co-founders, right? Like, the tech co-founder has built software at yeah. scale before, right?
Yeah.
So it doesn't wake up and say, like, how do I build a scale system? I mean, like, you know,
yeah.
so if you look at fintech, I mean, we're world class, right? Fintech, financial services, yeah. whether it's wealth, payments, insurance, etc. Sorry, you were going to ask me a question.
Do you know something interesting? I was going to plug in something interesting about SalarySay. They were incubated in that office.
Oh, really?
That space there.
Wow. You have run an incubator too?
Yeah. Okay. So the Barbershop is a 25 crore fund.
Mm.
Mohit is a junior from IIM Lucknow.
Right.
So Mohit's like, hey, can we use this place? And we, like Moxie, the hair care brand, Mohit.
They Hoop used to even. Hoop also?
Hoop were not here.
Okay.
They used to sit here. We were SalarySay's first client.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Yeah. I remember that.
We're the first client.
That's amazing.
But now we don't have space. So we can't do the incubation anymore. We still invest. But SalarySay was here. So I feel nicely proud about it. Yeah,
so,
very cool.
So, look. You know, you guys were a first customer, but you know, like within like 3 months of launch, crazy. They landed Wipro.
Yeah.
You know, like.
But like, you know what?
Who gets to land Wipro? You know, like, Wipro is like a really hard customer to get. Like, and especially if you want to go sell to Wipro employees, you know, like. So anyway, I think fintech, right? Second, you know, let's take transactional consumer commerce businesses, yeah. okay? You know, founders who come out of Flipkart, who come out of Zomato, who come out of Swiggy, I mean, they are world class.
Yeah.
Why? Because they have seen scale.
Yeah.
They have built, they have shipped, they have run very complex operations, right? So you know, again, world class, right?
Yeah.
And then you can keep going, right? I think where, like you look at SaaS, right? Like if you look at traditional SaaS, I mean, our founders are world class. I mean, they know how to ship product, they know how to do demand gen, they know how to do, you know, all this kind of stuff. So I think what you're seeing today is, I mean, let's take brands, okay? Like in our current cohort of Surge, right? We have this company called The Health Factory. You know them?
I love their bread.
Yeah.
She introduced me.
Zero Meda bread.
Yeah.
She did our investment while she was,
yeah, I loved
it. Prachi and one of our colleagues, Tarini, you know, so Look, I mean,
he was already a customer. You were already a customer. You didn't know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, but if you look at Vinay, okay, Vinay is obsessed with bread.
Yeah.
Like really obsessed with bread. I mean, he loves bread. I mean, I think he like.
He started this. He's all things bread. Yeah.
Yeah. He started this company because, you know, his mom wouldn't let him eat bread because he loves bread because, you know, bread's unhealthy, right? Yeah. So he kind of comes off with this whole idea of like healthy bread and then becomes zero meda bread. But you know, if you look at Vinay and his Mohit, the co-founders, right? You know, their execution of a new brand, especially with quick commerce, because you know, with quick commerce, you need a whole different. It's a 10x on execution,
yeah.
right? Like
yeah.
because you know, if you have less than 98% fill rate,
yeah.
your scores start going down, and then you know, bad things start happening, right? So you have to be really good.
Especially bread, like the decision is like
it's a fresh product. Under then a second. You have to also be very agile.
Yeah.
Because
so,
the customer can easily move to an English oven or whatever.
So my point is, look, I mean, that team is just, it's great execution. You know, like at Dell, by the way, we used to run the business and still does. I think Michael still runs it week to week. Okay, every Friday you close your books. Every Friday.
Yeah.
So every Friday is like a quarter. Okay, imagine if every Friday was a quarter.
Yeah.
So Vinay runs it like that. Every Friday is a quarter. It's like run it like that. So execution, right? So I think, look, founder quality in many, many spaces is getting to be world class. Okay. So I think, like, if you ask me, what is the superpower that, let's say, a Silicon Valley has? You know, it has four things. Okay, it has world class founders.
Yeah.
We're already there. Now, of course, in some areas like AI research, we have to get better, right?
Yeah.
There's no question, and we will. Mm. We talked about that at the beginning, right? But in many other spaces, fintech, consumer commerce, you know, you name it, brands, etc., we're world class. I think the second thing it has is there's a very supportive ecosystem,
yeah.
right? Like capital, mentors, etc. I think we're getting there, right? Like, today, I mean, the reality is, look, if you're a really great founder, I mean, if you're leaving, let's say if you've got really great ideas, okay?
Yeah.
I mean, really differentiated ideas, and you can tell your story, you will raise capital.
Yeah.
The days of, you know, running around for 7 months trying to raise $1 million, that's gone. Okay.
Yeah.
Now people still have to do that because yeah. either they don't have that insight or
yeah.
maybe they can't tell the story right. So that's the second part that they have, right? I think the third part that they have is they have a very large market.
Yeah.
Okay. So what are we missing in many spaces? That is what it's 27 trillion of 27 trillion of GDP versus just about four trillion.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm. So if you ask me today, that's the only delta.
Yeah.
That is the only delta, right? Fourth they have, which especially, you know, is a Stanford and Berkeley.
Okay? The academic value. Yeah,
Stanford and Berkeley. And actually, if you ask me, why do we need to catch up on, especially at the model layer? It's because we haven't had enough research.
And then there are institutions like the IIT Madras Incubation
yeah.
Lab.
Yeah, I mean, they're great.
But you know what? We need TIFR and we need ISC and we need ICTS to like really ramp up on this.
No, and they are, you know, the thing is, and that's why I'm so confident because I spend a lot of time, right? I spend a lot of time with IIT Madras. I'm on a bunch of these committees. Look, the raw science talent that we have is world class.
Mm.
You need to have budgets, right? Like the average research project at an IIT or an ISC is less than a crore.
Yeah.
Okay,
mm.
But you can't do anything for 25 lakhs or 50 lakhs.
Yeah.
You can't do a big research breakthrough project for like 50 lakhs.
Yeah.
Okay, that is changing. Okay, so I don't know whether you know this, but Chris Gopalakrishnan, who was the Infosys founder, right, etc. So Chris does a lot of funding of research. So he's funding in IIT and ISC research on brain, right? So if you look at brain research, mapping brains live, you know, between IIT Madras and ISC, they have more brains, like real brains, human
yeah.
brains, yeah, to do research on than anybody else in the world. Okay, so as a result, we have more data on brains.
More humans in a different way.
But brains. Yeah. Like, by the way, this is the benefit of having 1.4 billion humans,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
You know, you can get like anything you want, right? Yeah. So Chris has funded significant amounts. I mean, his own personal, you know, this is
yeah.
his from coming from his you know, his own funding, right? So he's personally funding these very large scale projects. And you're beginning to see this, right? I mentioned the AI centers
yeah.
of excellence that are being formed,
mm.
Etc. So I think as we take our budgets up, right? So you have to do two things. You have to take the budgets up.
Yeah.
And then also there's especially even in academic, you know, there's a lot of research bureaucracy, right? So which, you know,
yeah.
you have to kind of remove. So as those things, I don't know if you haven't been, you should go to the IIT Madras Research Park. It's
yeah.
called the Research Park. Research Park has two things. They have large companies who do research in collaboration with the academics. And there's an incubator. The incubator has like 300 companies. Agnikul came out of there. Unifor
yes.
came out of there.
Aether came out of there,
right? So
one of our search companies also.
Oh, yeah. In our last quarter search, we had two companies.
Yeah.
Both are semiconductor companies.
Wow.
Inco and Mindgrowth
came
from IIT Madras. And then Nutrace was incubated in IIT Madras. Right. So I think you're beginning to. So anyway, so those are the four things. Right?
And do professors get involved?
Yeah, like absolutely.
PhD projects,
actually, you know, you
professors.
Should get the Agnikul founder on your podcast because, you know, he's an Indian who was a banker in New York and then he decides, you know, he'll tell you a story. But he actually cold emailed one of the profs at IIT Madras. Cold email saying, I want to build a space tech company. He said, why don't you come? And he came. And now we have Agnico. It's great.
That is insane.
First 3D printed engine, like in the world.
And even like, for example, have you been to T-Hub in Hyderabad?
Yeah, I have.
It is insane. They have an insanely large 3D printing lab.
Really?
Which can make anything which any of those founders want to make
in
like a day.
Is this part of some educational institute?
T-Hub is basically the government of Andhra Pradesh, plus I think grants from private investors, plus
mostly it's government
ISB.
Funding actually. Government funding.
It's a government thing. With the CEO and everything, and they have infrastructure there. So you said there are four things, and where are we lacking on this? So academic research.
Today I would say, look, we're lacking on research, right? Because of budgets. Because of budgets, right? Like, look, you have to spend a lot. So here's the number, okay? So India spends about 0.6% of GDP on R&D.
Correct.
US is at about 3.5%. China is at about 3%. Now, US is at a 3.5% on a 27 trillion GDP.
Yeah.
Okay? We're at 0.6% on a
4 trillion.
Almost 4 trillion GDP. Yeah. Almost. Yeah. We're not there. Almost 4 trillion GDP. China is on a 3% on a 16 trillion GDP, right? So, one, we don't spend enough. So, you know, like, if you don't... Now, of course, you don't... I mean, 0.6% on 4 trillion, right? Yeah. Like, we don't have to spend 8% on 4 trillion, but... You know, we have to spend a basic amount, right? Like, and a basic metric I use is like, what is the average research project in IIT? Okay, well, how much is it? Like, a crore is not enough, right? So that's one. I think the other thing is, look, we have to spend more,
yeah,
right? And we have to have more people going into research, right? And when you spend more, you do, because you know those things are pretty. And other thing is, you know, Indian private companies don't spend enough,
yeah,
right? So if you look at the 0.6% of GDP spent on R&D, 2/3 of that is government. Only 1/3 is private sector. Actually, if you look at China and the US, it's flipped. 2/3 of R&D spending is by private sector and 1/3 comes from government.
And
right? So here, interesting data point for you. Google spends more on R&D than all of India. One company.
But at least how it actually
by the way,
ended up
Israel
starting is...
spends with 8 million people. Israel spends as much money on R&D as all of India with 1.4 billion people. So that those two are very interesting data points to say how much more we need to spend. Both government, by the way, but also private sector. In fact, the number one thing we have to do is we have to unlock private sector R&D.
And I completely agree. But the thing is, it's a cycle, right? You need the talent. You can't just make capital
and
available.
A lot of it is also government seeding it in some way. Yeah. Like even the way it started in the US, right? The entire semiconductor research which ended up starting was basically for the
Watson,
government.
Yeah.
Yeah, it ended up basically getting seeded by that and then essentially private sector followed.
Exactly.
But typically private sector will seed and government will scale it. That's how it should be. Like private sector, someone will see it.
No, but the basic, you know, the basic research, basic science needs to be done by government. Yeah. Because, you know, it's very long horizon, right? Like, but the best way to do it is, you know, private sector funding, you know, research, right? Like, let's just say the auto industry, right? Auto industry, by the way, does spend, interestingly, has reasonable R&D, you know.
Because they have long product gestation life cycles, right? I think it also comes
But what I'm saying is like, let's say you wanna transform motors, okay?
Yeah.
That's a great project for the Indian auto companies, whether it's a Maruti or Tata Motors or whatever, to fund with IIT, you know, like, but you know, it's a 5-year project, you put a lot of capital, it's small, it's slowly beginning to happen, but it needs to happen. But so I would say, look, where we are lacking in R&D.
And private.
But both private and public. Private, right? So it's not just a government thing, right? Yeah. Like you can't, and the other is just time. You know, we need time so that our economy goes from 4 trillion to 5 trillion to 8 trillion to 10 trillion.
Is this the best time to be a venture capitalist?
I mean, look, it is absolutely the best time, right? Like, if you look at it, that's why, you know, it's
the best time to be an entrepreneur and hence also the best time to be a venture capitalist.
Yeah, I gave her a really hard time. Actually, when she first said she wants to leave, I'm like, I just ignored it. But she changed her mind.
For a few months.
I just ignored it. Anyways, but we're very happy, very, very, very happy for her new path. Yeah. Anyway, yeah, it's a great time. Look, it's a great time because, you know, you have world-class founders starting up, right? India is interesting where, I mean, you're a great example of this, right? Like, in which other country in the world is somebody launching a men's grooming brand that has 18% share against Gillette?
Yeah.
Like, nowhere. Maybe China. I don't know. How much share does it have in China? Gillette, not you.
Gillette is, again, very, very distributed in China. China has been able to, like, first of all, it's a low hair density market.
Hmm.
Oh, so it's right, not.
Right.
So the more east you go, the lesser the hair
interesting,
management.
Interesting. Yeah, anyway, so India is a very broad-based.
That's a curveball he wasn't expecting.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, no, it's a data point I didn't think of. So anyways, the So one, you have world-class talent signing up, right? And second, you look, you have innovation in every sector, right? Yeah. Like whether it's brands, whether it's gaming, whether it's commerce. I don't know whether you've been to a hospital lately. I've unfortunately, because of family, had to be in a bunch of hospitals lately. Like hospitals in India today, in the big cities, are more crowded than the most crowded malls.
Yeah.
And this is at $2,700 per capita. Yeah. Can you imagine like $4,000 per capita?
Yeah.
You won't be able to go in. So you're like, my favorite hospital, which I won't name because I'm a big fan of this hospital, they have a platinum lounge, okay? There's a line to get into the platinum lounge. I mean, it's like, it's like going to the, it's like going to these, you know, in the airports, they have these.
Lounges.
There's a line to get into the lounge. It's actually easier to sit outside. It's less crowded than going to the lounge. Everybody wants to go to the lounge, right? There's so much demand. Yeah. So whether it's healthcare, you know, I mean, so it's, and, you know, AI, software, you know, et cetera. So, so I think that's the second thing, right? Yeah. Like, so today, you know, in the US, all investors are only focused on one theme.
Which AI, is software and AI, right?
In India, it's also AI, but it's AI squared, right? Yeah. It's all about India, every sector of India, and it's also about AI, right? Correct. So it's AI squared. So I think that's the second reason, because we have a lot more choice, right? To invest in, like financial services, right? I mean, there's infinite depth, healthcare, infinite depth, education, infinite depth. Yeah. Everything has infinite depth, right? Yeah. So I think that's the second reason. I think third reason, though, it's not just about India, it's about global. And we just talked about that, right? Like this, you know, actually
from 20, India for the world.
Last year, 40% of new seed-funded companies were building for the world from day zero.
From India for the world?
Yeah, for the world, right? Yeah, like AI companies. Because, you know, it's not just AI now, right? It's manufacturing, it's brands, you know, it's all that. Actually, yesterday we had a founder pitch to us who's going to launch a brand from scratch, not even targeting India, just targeting the US. Right? Because with Amazon direct selling, I mean, you know this, right? Yeah. You're in the brand business. So I think that's the third reason. I think the fourth thing is, look, the government's been very supportive, right? If you look at deregulation, of course, there are some sectors like gaming where, things need to get better. But in general, look, it's very supportive, right? Defense has opened up, space opened up because of regulation, right? There's a lot of all this PLI stuff will help with sort of manufacturing and so on. So if you look at all of that, and then you add the most important thing that has changed over the last 2 or 3 years is the IPO market.
Yeah.
Right. So
that makes it harder. To kind of be at least a growth stage investor for sure.
Yeah, I mean, but, you know, that will also change, right? Like, because what growth, I mean, look, the great thing about humans are we adapt quickly.
Yeah.
You know, so the growth stage investor goes slightly earlier, right? Yeah. So, but look, I mean, which other country in the world?
Man,
look,
so
NASDAQ, I mean, this year it'll change with Trump and, you know, a bunch of things. I mean, everybody's expecting the US IPO markets to open up. Last 2 years, NASDAQ has been essentially closed for business, okay?
Yeah.
There have been a handful of IPOs. Look at India. We had 80 main board IPOs. 15 venture funded companies went public last year. You just look at our firm, Peak 15, right? We've had 17 IPOs since the pandemic. You know, a few like Freshworks have been outside.
Yeah.
Mama. The rest of them have been, you know, Mama, Zomato, you know, Ixigo, you know, everything. Sorry?
Nika was yours?
No, we weren't investors in Nika. But that's a great example, right? So, I mean, and all of a sudden, and it's not just the big IPOs, the companies we are talking about, right? The reality is, look, if you build a, I don't know, 100 crore company with 10 crores of
profit,
you can go public today. You can go public on the SME IPO. You'll be valued at 10 to 20 times. So maybe 200, 300 crore valuation. You raise 50 or 100 crores. And then you could build for the next 10 years. Where in the world does that option exist? Nowhere. Yeah. Right? So, and you look at that from an investor standpoint, man, there's never been a better time. Actually, that last point has been one of the biggest bugaboos of the Indian venture ecosystem, right? Which is, where are the exits?
Yeah.
Right? So now today, if you build a profitable company, you have lots of exit options. Yeah. I mean, the idea that, like, let's say, right, in 5 years, you know, her new company gets to, I don't know, 5 years, your plan is 1,000 crores, okay? 1,000 crores of revenue with 400 crores of PAT.
Look at him, like, soft signaling. Soft signaling the target.
Yeah, yeah. Right, like, let's say, whatever, 300, 400 crores of PAT. Very profitable. Right? So, and by the way, you know, think about it, right? Like, we're already in a 4 trillion economy, okay? In 10 years, India will be whatever. Let's call it 7 trillion. In a 7 trillion economy, if you can't build a 1,000 crore revenue company, like, what are we talking about?
I agree.
You know what I mean? I mean, what are we talking about?
And that's the thing. Like, today, India's stock market is like at 5.5 trillion.
Yeah. It's going to be 10 trillion by 2030. 10 trillion.
So, you have 10 trillion. So, there's a 5 trillion additional valuation upside that will happen, possibly from a large chunk of that will come from new companies going public.
Yeah, so, you know, I think...
And that'll attract capital. And the good part about public markets in India, and I hope it stays that way because of growth, and that's the whole question about growth, right, is
they value you on projected revenues, and like private capital is always like kind of backdated, and so you immediately.
What do you mean private capital is? Give me a break.
No.
Oh, backdated. What were you at Surge when you were investing in?
No, Surge is too early. Like for example, if
Series
we
A,
out,
Series B.
If we go out to raise capital,
yeah,
we will so FY24, FY25.
So you're saying even at your scale,
yeah,
you will get a higher value, better valuation in the public markets than the private markets. When are you going public, by the way?
So we are not. We just did our second profitable quarter.
Okay.
But our profit is like last quarter was like 56 lakhs for the quarter.
Got it.
So we're kind of there, but not meaningful.
Yeah, you got to generate some.
Right. So for us now, we think that. If we are able to get to 500 crores at 50 crore EBITDA.
Yeah, that's a good number.
And Gillette trades at 11 times revenue.
Right.
Mm. Nobody has competed with Gillette in India the way we are.
Yeah.
Not Supermax, not Close, not Nivea, not Old Spice. No one has hit them. Like, we have crunched them into 200 to 500 price point.
Yeah.
Like Mark III and Fusion, phenomenal products. They're there.
Under I love Mark III, by the way.
It's a phenomenal product. We can't. It's their crown jewel globally. Right?
I love Mark III.
So 200 to 500.
You don't have a product that competes with Mark III? No. Not yet.
Let me get it.
Right.
We do, but it's not good enough.
Right.
The same cartridge fits on this razor.
Oh, okay.
So you can try both, see whatever works for you.
Okay. I'll try this.
So for us, what we ended up doing was, also another thing is, the first product a man would buy would be a 20 rupee razor at the age of 17. Today the first product a man is buying is a 400 rupee trimmer at the age of 14.
Wow.
So every Gillette customer is a potential Bombay Shaving Company customer 3 years before they enter the Gillette world.
Wow.
Right? At a 20x price point. That is the advantage.
Wow, that's amazing.
So for us, we're like, okay, not only are we like 17-18% of your share, but under 200 rupees, we have you crunched because we have the great disposables and it's a commoditized market. So we have a 50 paise blade, by the way. The 50 paise blade used by barbers. We have a 20 rupee disposable, which has got three features better than the Gillette. And we have a 99 rupee three-blader razor, which Gillette does not have because they cannot cannibalize Mark III. Mark III and Fusion between 200 and 500. Above 500 is trimmers and they don't play in that player, in that category at all. So for us, we have kind of flanked them on either side and that's how we will grow.
Very good.
But yeah.
So this is the Mark III?
This is a Mark III.
Yeah, this is a... What's the one you mentioned?
This is called Sensi Flow 6.
No, the not Mark III, no. This competes against the other
Fusion.
Six. Fusion.
Fusion, Mark V. Most people call it Mark V.
No, Mark V.
But yeah, so... I wanted to actually like kind of now that we are in the twilight of this conversation, I wanted to actually come to a little bit more about what, you know, a lot of people here are potential founders, but a lot of people here are building their careers. And I think we need a lot of, you know, career bashing, you know, go become a founder. Even this podcast is kind of guilty of just telling people like, just go become a founder, do your own thing. India needs lots of founders, blah, who will create all these jobs. But you also need people to like kind of build great careers and then kind of build enough assets and capital to fund. One of the biggest things I've seen is like people making enough money to kind of start allocating capital into private markets very early on. So I wanted to get like, you've built an incredibly successful career doing so many things from venture to being a CEO, to being a consultant, to, you know, setting up stuff for Dell. For a 22-year-old person watching who's kind of entering the workforce, thinking about building skills, finding mentors, becoming a valuable member of the ecosystem of productivity for India for the next 20 years, what is it that has helped you build this career? Like, if you were to like distill it down to a few things that you wish someone would have told you at 22, what would it be? Because you've seen someone build her career at let's say, peak 15.
Yeah.
And you kind of have touched a lot of lives. But what would that be?
Yeah, I think you have to work hard.
That's a dangerous thing to say today. But
look, I mean, it's like physics, you know.
Shantanu's got into a lot of trouble for this.
Yeah, I mean, look, you have to work hard. So you have to work really hard. And also, you have to stay at it for a while, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you know, my first job was McKinsey. I was there for 11 years. Because I think the first few years, and then, you know, I transitioned to being an operator. You know, first at Dell and then Microsoft and then Google, right? But the first few years of whatever you're doing, you know, you're not very good at it because you don't know what you're doing, right?
Yeah.
So you just have to learn the trade. So
and trust the process, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, you're also like, you have to, yeah, I mean, no, it's just a 10,000 hour rule is real.
Yeah.
Like, unless you do something for 10,000 hours, you just can't be any good at it.
Yeah.
So I think you have to work hard and then you have to stay at it. And also you have to keep in mind that, you know, I think there's no such thing as perfect.
Yeah.
Right. Nothing's perfect. So You have to do something where you're enjoying it. Like you get satisfaction out of it, right? Like you like the work that you do. You won't like all of the work you do. That's for a fact, right? Nobody likes 100% of what you do. There are always some things you don't like. But you have to like a large part of what you do, right? Yeah. So, you know, if you're a coder, you better like coding, you know? Yeah. You don't like coding, you should be a coder, you know? Yeah. Like if you're in sales, you got to like spending time with customers, you know? And if you're a marketer, you have to, you know, so you have to like the core of what you're doing, right? Like now, and the time just gets you better. Right? And working hard makes you better, right? Yeah. So I think that's what's important is...
And also maybe to also find like the right mentor for you.
Yeah, I think finding
people
yeah.
also. I mean, with this, you also need the right people to shape your trajectory.
Yeah,
that's true.
That's true.
What he like? You talk about him a lot socially.
Yeah.
Right.
All good things, Rajan.
Yeah. Oh gosh. Yeah. Right.
But what was it about his tutelage over the last 5-6 years that gave you the confidence to kind of back yourself to be an entrepreneur, raise capital from him, and kind of. Like your from two has been amazing. I've kind of witnessed it, and she gives a lot of credit to you and the ecosystem that she's a part of. But if you were to kind of distill that out, what would it be?
So it's interesting because, you know, Rajan is probably, I mean, my only boss I've had in a way, or mentor.
Well, no bosses.
Yeah, just bosses. Mentors. Yeah,
you only have mentors.
Yeah, because I always worked at startups where we were all pretty young. In consulting, yes. I refused to accept anyone as my mentor. quote unquote. And so, I mean, honestly, learning with someone like Rajan was it really shaped the way I think I also think about my startup. So three things, right? Every day may it be something like, you know, you've probably spent the night with founders where there's been some event, etc. You'll find Rajan in his, you know, at work at 7:45 a.m. So just like crystal clear work ethic.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like nobody else.
And
with the kind of energy, which is probably hard for a 22-year-old to probably also manage with even caffeine or whatever. So that is number one. Second is being truly honest to the people around you. And I think that breeds a lot of respect and a lot of respect for your trade. And also the people that you work around you, right? So a lot of founders would actually ask me, hey, you know, our monthly meeting happened. What is Rajan thinking about us? You know, what's the thing in the building?
Yeah.
You know, it's like whatever you heard in the room is exactly what is being talked about in the building or whatever it is, whatever they mean.
Authentic, yeah.
So just truly authentic and being transparent. So what you see is what you get.
Yeah.
And I hope that I'm also able to build that
at
my
hard
company, right?
It's damn hard.
But it builds a lot of trust. Yeah. It builds a lot of trust because at many places you could see that you win together, but you lose alone.
Yeah.
That's very easy to happen.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, a little bit of, you know, his leadership style, just given that he's also been at larger orgs, etc., sort of ensures, you know, all that. And then third is just starting from zero always. So there are so many of these sectors that we didn't know anything about.
Yeah.
Right? And the ability to basically be like, hey, let's be unassuming and learn something about it without coming into any preconceived notions. So that was truly something that I had not seen in anybody else. And even yet, like when we meet with VC leaders outside of, I haven't seen that.
Yeah.
It was very kind.
That's incredible. No, by the way, she's not being inauthentic at all because... Every time we talk about her company or what, how her day, we hang out a lot.
We should cut the amount of, you know.
nothing. Right. You know, we're cutting nothing. Yeah? That was amazing. Because,
no, that was good. That was
because
good.
You can see the impact you've had on her. And who's had that impact on you? Like, how did you, like, I'm sure there are a lot of people who touched your lives when you, like, your life when you were maybe a junior associate or, you know, new at Google or whatever.
Yeah.
And who pulled you up?
Yeah, no, for sure. I've had lots of folks who deeply impacted my career. You know, one of the things I've always believed is, you know, you should try to learn from everybody you work with because, you know, everybody has a lot to offer, okay? It doesn't matter whether, you know, whether this person is more senior, whether they're, whether they've just joined the company. But, you know, early in my McKinsey career, I mean, I had lots of terrific mentors, right? I love McKinsey. You know, I worked with a bunch of senior partners who were just amazing, right, in Chicago. Then I came to India for 2 years. So my first stint in India was 94 to 96.
Wow.
I worked with somebody called Ranjit Pandit in India. Then I worked with Tino Puri, who was like set up the India office. I mean, these are like extraordinary leaders, right? So Learned a lot from Michael Dell, learned a lot from like the various folks I reported to it. So, you know, I try to learn from folks because I think everybody, everybody has, there are things that you can learn a lot from pretty much anybody, right? Like who's either been at it for a while or like, for instance, you know, we are so selective. We have so few people, right, on our team, right? Like, so I don't know, how many people do we interview to hire an analyst?
More than 70, probably.
Yeah,
70,
like 70, 80. This is like the cream of the cream of the cream.
And
then 70,
interview,
80.
Like the resume shortlist is even longer.
Yeah, it must be thousands, right? So to hire one person, right? So like whoever we hire, like, you know, has clearly done like lots of very interesting things, even if they're 21 years old or 23 or whatever. So, yeah, I've had a huge, and like even today, right, like whether it's our team, Prachi and the search team, whether it's my partner, Shalendra, Mohit, right? Look, the reality is, like, if you look at, you know, our partners in the firm, everybody, every one of my partners has been at it for at least twice the amount of time. You know, I've been in venture capital 5 years now, okay? Yeah. They've been at least at it for 10 years, and I think this is Shalendra's 20th year, Mohit's 19th year. So that is four times as much experience as I have.
Yeah.
Right? So, I mean, every day I learn so much from, you know, these folks who've been at it for a long time, right? And then, like, all our team members. So I have a simple thing, which is, you know, like, you should be learning all the time. All the time, right? And
it requires a certain amount of humility to do that, by the way.
Yeah.
Yeah,
especially as you become more and more successful.
Well, I think you have to, humility, but I think more importantly, you just have to be insanely curious, right? Like curious and, you have to be humble. Like, I mean, I think that's really, that goes without saying, right? Like, yeah. I think it's very hard to do it if you think the world of yourself, right? Like, you know, I don't know anything. You know, I think that's really important. I think it's just a way you live your life, which is to say, like, what can you learn from every... Like, if you say, like, I want to learn something from every meeting I have, you just look at your, like, meeting differently, right? Yeah. Like, I love meeting founders. Except for Mondays where we have our ICs, right? Different ICs for different teams. Every other day I'm meeting five... I try to meet at least five new companies. My first meeting is 30 minutes. Usually, you know, either somebody wrote to me or one of our team members has met, like, once or twice. So today I met 1, 2, 3, 4. Today I'm, you know, that's one of the reasons, you know, the podcast, because it takes time. Like I could be doing a podcast or meeting a founder. You know? I mean, to me, there is no question which one I'd rather do.
You're doing both.
Yeah, that's true.
And meeting two founders.
This is true. Actually, I did meet five.
Yeah.
Although you're new, so I already know you. So yeah, you're my fifth new. So
I'm glad to be in the clique on this one.
And you know, and one of the reasons I like meeting new founders is because I learn so much, right? One, of course, they're looking to raise capital, so you know, we can decide to invest or not invest. But I learned so much, right? Like, I mean, I learned so much. So today I met a founder who's like super seasoned. I just learned about the resale phone market. Like, really interesting, you know? I didn't know anything about the resale phone market, right? Like, from you, I've learned that. Like that
Chinese don't share.
No, that the
or as
the,
you go
the,
east.
No,
there's
no,
like
no.
Less
the single
hair.
Biggest thing I learned from you is like Indian men are shaving less. Yeah. Huh? at $2,700 a capita. Because I had assumed until you made that comment, I had assumed every category in India will grow.
Yeah.
Because we had $2,700 per capita, so 4,000. Of course, you're going to consume more. But like at $2,700, I think it's the only category possibly.
Yeah.
Where the category is declining.
It's getting replaced. It's premium.
No, I know, but like,
yeah.
Like razor blade.
As a product wise.
Yeah, yeah.
Product,
sure.
I mean, like, what are the products?
Same product
decline?
Growth is very tricky.
You know, like, yeah, I mean, like, so, you know, like, so I love learning these things about, like, wow.
And where does that come from?
Yeah.
How did that
How
sort
do you
of get
curious,
cultivated?
Like, at after such a successful career, people switch off, man. People, like, kind of.
I think the most important thing is to not believe you're successful.
Come
like,
on.
No, seriously, you have
you
to.
Cannot be that. That
no, no,
that
I'm telling you. I'm telling you, like, what have I done so far, right? Like, think about it, no? I mean, think about all the things humanity has achieved over civilizational history, okay? Like, have we done anything? Nothing. We haven't done anything. Nothing. Yeah. Zero, right? Like, no, I mean, I genuinely mean this, right? Like, you look at, you look at civilizational history and you look at the greatest humans who lived and what they did, what have we done?
I agree.
Absolutely nothing.
If that's the lens, then
no, yes. That's the lens. That has to be the lens, right?
That can't be the lens on a daily basis, right?
No, but you have to live your life with that lens, right? Otherwise, you know, you get complacent and you're like, I mean, like, you know, so like...
It's an amazing
like,
thing, actually.
Where do I get the curiosity? I don't know. I'm just curious. I just love learning. That's why I listen to podcasts. I love to learn. I don't read as much as I should, but I try to read as much as I can.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, if you...
You're right. Your profession lends itself to being surrounded by really interesting people a lot. Like horizontally and vertically both.
No, it's the greatest thing about what I do now, which is every day, let's say every day I'm meeting 5 new entrepreneurs. Okay, only for 30 minutes. This first meeting is 30 minutes. These are the most interesting. I mean, like, look, both of you, now you're going to be, now she's an entrepreneur. I was just going to say going to be, she's already one. By the way, I tried really hard. We tried really, I mean.
I know.
First by ignoring.
I'm aware.
Then by like ignoring. In fact, like on a farewell party day, on the day we had a farewell
that
party.
That morning.
Like, you really want to go? I mean, like.
There's still time,
like,
you know.
I mean, like, you know. Actually, you can still come back, by the way. Yeah, she hasn't spent any of the money, so. Still come back. Yeah,
once you start spending, the door is closed.
Yeah, just kidding. I think just being curious. I think like...
And especially at Seed, you have to probably do that, right? Yeah. Because a lot of these ideas just sound very crazy in the beginning, right? So you have to have the humility to be able to hear and then just be honest.
Because a lot of stuff that you're going to invest in is because you believe that it's going to upend the...
And it's not been done before, so there is like no history on it.
Yeah, and also like, you know, at Seed, you... One is the idea. You have to obviously, you know, like, you have to be intrigued by the idea, right? You remember the shoe company you had, we had made? So we spent some time with him today. It's really interesting shoe company, okay? Not that shoe company, this is the other one.
Yeah, I got it.
Yeah, okay. yeah, sorry, she was with us still like a month ago. She knows everything.
He's making it a point.
So, you know, like this entrepreneur is going to build a shoe company the world's never seen before. No, it's a, like the thesis, the original thesis is like really interesting, but it's not obvious, right?
Yeah.
So anyway, this point that she was making is that, but the bet has, at Seed especially, right? The bet is on the founding team.
Yeah.
Either single founder, you know, two or three founders, right? You have to really think that this, I mean, that's, so there are a lot of companies that we meet where we like the thesis, but we're not as excited about the founding team, right? And
how do you measure that in a meeting? Like, how do you know a good founder in one meeting or two meetings? Is it a ref check thing? Or
you know when you know. It's like product market fit, you know? Like, by the way, you know this? Like, founders keep asking whether they have product market fit. They have no product market fit. If you're asking whether you have product market fit, you don't have product market fit, right? So, so we look for, like, capability. Actually, the thing you're really looking for is insights. Right. That's the most important thing, right? You have to have some unique insights about the problem you're trying to solve, right? So, and then you obviously look at, by the way, we do lots of, I mean, founders don't realize this, but we do a large number of ref checks. In fact, today, you know, we are evaluating a whole bunch of, I mean, we meet lots of companies, right? We evaluate 4,000 companies, by the way, between 4,000 and 5,000 companies.
Yeah.
No, per each cohort. And then we have 10 to 15, 10 to 20 companies per cohort.
Wow.
So the 10th cohort, we have 14 companies. I think we evaluated 3,000 or 4,000 companies. So you know, it's like, you know, like with very few companies we partner with. So what I was going to say is, like, today, actually, we passed on a company. We love the thesis. Entrepreneurs came across really well, but their ref checks were really bad.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So that's one of the things. And by the way, we don't ever ask. We're not going to ask you who we should do references with. But we will talk to folks you work with. We've talked to people in the company. And this is one of the things because, you know, by definition, entrepreneurs are very... you know, independent, right? Like, and, you know, they'll piss people off and that's all good, right? But I think people who are, you know, like, who are going to start up, if they're in companies, just don't burn all bridges.
Yeah.
You know, because then when you call and you get like, and especially like, you know, with this particular founder, we just got a bunch of references, just
all,
all negative. Fuck. You know, like you do 5-1 negative, 4 positive, that's okay, right? Like you expect that. And also we know what to look for, right? Like, you know, like never listen. That's a good trait.
Yeah.
Compliance issues, not a good
trait. Oh, God.
You know, or like, you know, like could never build a team. Not a good trait. Yeah. How are you going to build a team?
That's an intrinsic issue. Yeah.
So, you know, I think we do a lot of reference checks. Founders don't realize that. And always blind. Always blind, by the way. Always blind. I mean, blind meaning like we don't ask you who we're going to. Who should I talk to? I mean, we don't do that.
LinkedIn makes it easy.
No, LinkedIn, no. The thing is, we know lots of people.
Yeah.
Right?
For sure.
I mean, it's a country with 1.4 billion, but quite frankly, it's quite small. So.
Yeah. That's amazing. One final word from the both of you before we kind of go on if someone's watching and wants to start up, one final piece of advice that we have not covered today. We've covered stuff around passion, we've covered stuff around like kind of building big
talent. Yeah, let's talent, ask her. She just started
scale,
up. So.
Yeah. But now that you've taken the leap, it's fairly recent, right? It's probably a year in the making. Yeah. But what's that year been like, and what will you tell someone who's kind of going to go through it?
I think the type of people you surround yourself with makes a huge difference. And in the past 5 years, I was surrounded with a lot of entrepreneurs, a lot of optimists in that sense. And that makes a lot of difference how you see the world, how you view the world. And it's especially when you want to become an entrepreneur, you want to be surrounded with people who will say, hey, why not?
Yeah.
Instead of telling you a bunch of 100 reasons why the startup would make sense.
Yeah.
So surrounding yourself, either that could be with your mentors, the institution you go to, or the job you pick. Super, super important.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that would be one.
And that's an active skill, by the way. Like to know who to hang out with and to know who to not. Mm. Is an active skill. Yeah, that's
relationship building also takes effort.
It's very valuable.
Yeah, I think, it's a 10 to 20 year journey. And as you know, it's a really, really hard journey. It is the hardest job on planet Earth. There's no harder job than being an entrepreneur, than being a founder. Because, you know, it takes 10, 15 years. You go through 4, 5, 6, maybe 10 near-death moments. There's no guarantee of success whatsoever. You could be doing well for the first 3 years and then everything ends, right? So I think you have to go in with your eyes wide open. I find that some entrepreneurs think that they're going to build quickly, and there are so many better ways to make a lot of money.
Yeah.
You should never become an entrepreneur to make a lot of money. I absolutely agree. So I think that's one, which is this long, you just have to go in with eyes wide open, right? I think the second thing is, look, you have to do something where you're really passionate, because it's a 10, 15, 20 years thing, right? You shouldn't, like I find, and this is not for Prachi, because by the way, you know, with her idea, she's like more excited than she ever was for like 4 years, okay? So that's when I said, okay, fine, like this makes sense. But a lot of, especially VCs who become founders, they do it based on thesis.
Yeah.
That's like a really bad idea. It may be a great thesis, but man, you're going to have to spend 20 years doing this. Okay, you're going to have to go through 5 near-death moments. You're not going to pay a mortgage payment. You know, like this is not a way to do it.
Hang
okay?
on to the disclaimer.
Yeah, exactly. That's why you have the disclaimer. So, like, you have to really like the problem, right? Yeah. And then the last thing I'd say is, you have to have some really unique insights.
Yeah.
Right? Like, I find people, I'm going to do this because this is big. Like, everybody wants to build an AI company. Okay. Like,
what?
And also, what is that unique insight, either about a vertical need that there is or like some tool you want to build? So I think you have to be very, very, there are two schools of thought about becoming a founder. Okay. One just says, just jump in and you'll figure it out. I think that is one way you could do it. And there are successful stories of that. But I think
those are outliers, I feel.
Yeah, and also, like, I think that's maybe not the best way to do it, right? Mm-hmm. Like, is find something you're excited about, really spend a lot of time.
That also gets glorified a lot, right? More. Like, the young entrepreneur, you know, dropping out of college and then starting
up. It's a dangerous path.
But that also gets glorified a lot more than all the silent ones which you've been building for many years.
It's a good story to tell.
Huh?
It's a good story to tell.
Yeah, it's a good story.
Very few people realize it's the exception. I think
just being very thoughtful and doing enough groundwork, right, to really figure out, is there a real... Because you can do that, right? Especially if your audience is folks who are doing something, right? They're either in a company or a startup or maybe still in school. You have the time. You just take the time to really study it, to make sure there's a real problem to be solved. Now, that being said, by the way, by the time when you launch, you'll have to pivot and iterate and all of that. But at least going in, just being thoughtful and being number one aware, and like, this is a 10-15 year journey, man, it is really hard. It is really hard.
This is your 10.
Yeah, exactly, right? And you're just about getting started, right? So by the way, Sanjay Bikhchandani, I don't know whether you had him on your pod, but he has a very interesting thing which I think is, he says, look, in India at least for now, it could change a decade, it will change a decade from now, the second decade is when it fires. Right?
You look at
it.
The second decade has?
When it really takes off. First decade, you're laying foundation, plumbing, it takes 3 years to get to PMF and all of that. So you look at Info Edge, third decade, Zomato, second decade.
Make My Trip.
Yeah, Make My Trip, third decade, right? Yeah. So make my trip pretty much, I mean, 2000 founding, 2010 IPO, 2010 to 2021, same market cap. Yeah. And now it's like 11 billion market cap, right? 3 years. So actually Shailendra, who's a, you know, who's our partner, has a saying, is this the right decade for this idea?
Yeah.
Like for travel, this is the right decade.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. India travel, this is the right decade, correct, right? But there are other ideas where, you know, may not be the right decade.
And that's clear. But so if you look at a company that's lasted 20 years,
mm-hmm,
90% of the valuation upside has happened in the decade.
In the second
two,
decade?
10 in the first decade.
Yeah, I mean, like, or 90 you know, to 8. Warren Buffett and Berkshire Hathaway, right? Like Warren, you know, whatever his net worth's over $100 billion, right? I think a large part of his net worth was after he crossed 75.
Yeah.
You know, he's 94 now.
Yeah.
You know, so, I mean, yeah. So compounding, you know, just this is a game for compounders, right? You just have to keep compounding for 15, 20, 30, 40 years. And, you know, if you do that, you win. I mean, by the way, if you stay at anything for 20 years, you win.
Yeah. NVIDIA added like 3 times the market cap in the last 1 year than their entire lifetime before that.
Crazy.
Sometimes it's just the time, he's right.
The only thing though in India is that we sometimes also glorify struggle a lot.
Yeah.
And so knowing when to give up is also... Yeah. I don't think this is the end that we want. We want to probably end on a higher...
You're right. You're absolutely right.
High
everyone
note.
Everyone says this. It's a 20-year journey. It's a, so people just assume, like, I have to like earn my stripes.
And then there are people just going at it when...
Yeah, when it's not required.
Yeah,
that's when I think board members and investors have to say that.
Have to step in. Yeah,
yeah, just either pivot or give up. It's okay.
Rajan, awesome.
What a pleasure to have you. Thank you for having me. Yeah, I really hope
great
that
you with both of you.
Prachi, if he has not changed his mind on podcast, it's on you, not on me. Or not liking podcasts at all. But I think I learned a lot. I follow you from a distance. I'm so glad I could spend like an hour and a half with you, like kind of with your undivided attention, because I see what you do on Twitter and I see your interviews and so on. And you're an incredibly, and through Prachi, somehow I vicariously kind of get to see, have glimpses into your world. But she's like, you know, Rajan's energy levels are just insane. And he's like this all the time. And I think about myself, I'm like, cool. I have so much more I can do to be like this. So thank you so much for giving a glimpse into that again.
Of course. Thank you for having me, being so generous. And great to see Prachi again.
Yeah, but pleasure to have you.
All right, good.
Thank you. Awesome.